In this presentation, I'll be discussing a question that is very important to me. What makes a programming language good, not just in general terms, but specifically good for writing free software? Before diving into that, though, I'd like to take the opportunity to introduce myself to those of you who don't know me. My name is Daniel, but some of you may know me as Code Sections if you've seen me around the Racco community. I'm a full-time free software developer, and my primary programming language is Racco, although I also program in Rust or other languages as the need arises. I also serve on the Racco Steering Council. Before switching to software, I was a practicing attorney with a law firm in New York City, and though I no longer practice, the mindsets are a bit more similar than you might think. Oh, and one other note, the icon that I use, I have noticed that it is pretty similar to Camilla, the logo for the Racco programming language, but I wanted to mention that that is just a coincidence, though a happy one that makes me smile every time I notice it. With that out of the way, let's dive in. What makes a programming language especially good for writing free software? In the course of answering that question, there are three different points that I hope to convince you of. First, that free software projects are different. And when I say different, I really mean that in two different ways. First, free software projects are different from other types of software projects. And second, and perhaps more surprisingly, free software projects are different from the image that many people have of them. Second, I'd like to convince you that there are some excellent languages out there that just really aren't very good for writing free software. They're good at other things, but they're not good at that. And third, and relatedly, I'd like to convince you that the ideal free software language should be different from other languages, even other excellent languages, because it's aiming at different sorts of projects. It should have different design goals. So let's start by saying how free software projects are different. I'd like to start with an even more basic question. What is free software? What are typical free software projects? A lot of times people talk about free software by mentioning Linux or Firefox or other high-profile open source projects. And some people have said that free software is like building a cathedral where you have a group of architects and then many laborers who execute their plan. And other people have said, no, it's like a bazaar where many people work together along similar lines, but there's little or no central organization, but somehow out of that chaos, order emerges. Those are both kind of dated. More recently, I've seen a blog post that said free software is really like nuclear power, where you have a huge team that pours a lot of time and energy into an initial reaction, hoping that it will become self-sustaining and produce even more energy in the end. And I just don't really buy any of those. They all have some good points to them, but all of those analogies miss one really important thing. They miss the fact that Linux is a penguin. What I mean by that is you shouldn't think about Linux or Firefox when thinking about free software projects. Yes, a penguin is a bird, but if you think about penguins when thinking about birds, you're going to end up very confused about birds and have all sorts of the wrong ideas. A penguin and Linux are both exceptional examples that are not good to generalize from. And specifically, Linux and Firefox and these other high-profile projects are exceptional in terms of their size. Most free software projects are extremely small. This is a study from RedMonk, and before thinking it doesn't prove my point as well as it does, notice that the axis is logarithmic. So here, diving into their numbers a little bit more, they found that half of the active free software projects had only one contributor a year, 70% had one or two contributors, and 87% had five or fewer contributors. another group of academics took a look at the same issue. They came at it from a slightly different angle and looked at truck factor, how many sort of core contributors would it take for a project to really be in trouble if they were to go away. But cutting the other way, they took a very narrow definition of what it meant to be popular. They started just with the 100 most starred repos in six language and then removed any that were in the bottom 25% in terms of other measures of popularity, which cut out the majority of them, actually. So this is just the very most popular projects. But even in that sort of rarefied company, they found that 34% had a truck factor of just one primary developer, and another 30% had a truck factor of two. It's nice to have academic studies that give a sort of big picture view, but it's also helpful, I think, to dive into a more concrete example. So in that spirit, I'd like to talk about Impress.js, which is a somewhat randomly chosen project, but it's the software I use to write the slides that you're watching right now. And I really enjoyed using it. I thought it was a great project. It's very popular, tens of thousands of stars on GitHub. And when I open its contributor page on GitHub, I see that it has 77 contributors. Those aren't all in the same year, but I looked at it a little more closely and it had 16 contributors in its first year. So that would put it outside of the 87% of the projects that RedMonk said had fewer than five contributors. So it, on first look, seems like an exception to the rule that free software projects tend to be small. But let's look a little closer. When I dove in, its top contributor had 148 commits. The next contributor had 51 commits, then 14, then 6, then just 4. So this is not really a story of a project that has, is a bazaar with 70 different people all working together. It's really a story of a project that has a couple of main contributors and then other people who submitted, one-off patches or had particular features that they were interested in implementing. And I want to be clear that I'm not knocking that type of contribution. In fact, I did it myself. I found a couple of features that I wanted to add to Impress while I was writing this presentation and submitted some PRs. And I hope that that was helpful to the project. And I think that that sort of contribution absolutely can be. But I also think that if we're thinking about things in terms of a bazaar model, we're probably going to have the wrong idea. This is not a large group collaboration. This is a story of a couple people working as main authors and other people helping out, but in a different way. And I said a couple people, but let's take a look at those couple of main authors. And they're actually, well, we can notice the timing is kind of interesting. The first author had nearly all of their contributions in 2012. After that, the next main author started contributing in 2018. So this really isn't even a story of two people working together. This is a story of a project that had a primary maintainer, and then several years later, a different primary maintainer. So it has really been not a solo project, 77 contributors, but a project that has had a solo lead developer. Again, very different from the bazaar sort of model. So that actually makes me think free software is not like building a cathedral or running a bazaar or running a nuclear power plant. Writing free software is like writing a novel. Let me play out this analogy a little bit. As I just walked through, in both cases, you have one author or maybe a small handful of co-authors. In both cases, there are many other contributors for books that editors, agents, publishers, for software, all the contributors, bug fixes, documentation, etc. In both cases, those other contributors play a really essential, invaluable role, but they're not playing the same role as the author. And in both cases, the author is very likely to be part of some sort of broader community, literary community, coding community, but the actual writing of the code or of the prose is a solitary activity. So if that's the mental model we have, we think of writing free software as akin to writing a novel. What consequences does that have for us? Well, I want to return to these points. Free software projects are different than other software projects. They're less collaborative, more like writing a novel. That leads me to believe that some excellent languages are not good for writing free software. And I want to turn to that next. And then that will sort of bleed into our discussion of what design goals a free software language or a language targeting free software should have. So I want to talk about three programming languages that I personally think are excellently designed. They're ones that have gotten a lot of buzz and attention and developer mindshare. And I think that even though all of them are very different, all of them are especially poor fits for writing free software. The first language I wanted to mention is TypeScript, a JavaScript superset that adds types and transpiles to JavaScript and really targets, among other things, front-end development and executing in a browser. Second, Go or Golang, a compiled garbage collected language that targets fast compile times and is very active in sort of back-end server web development. And finally, Rust, a compiled language with no garbage collector that aims to equal C in performance and is very useful for systems programming and has gotten a lot of adoption. So these languages, as I said, are three very different languages. They don't have much at all in common other than the fact that they all have gotten a lot of attention and buzz lately, and for good reason, I think.